Good afternoon, this is Rob. Who's on?
Good morning, afternoon, whatever time it is. Ryan and Tim are on here. Larry's going to be with us momentarily, and Manko's on a plane to Europe.
Okay.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
How's the move coming along?
We're halfway in between. So we've sold the house in Indianapolis, and everything is in a moving van, and it's sitting in a warehouse in Indianapolis waiting for our clothes, which will be, we're actually moving in on the 16th of July. So,
nice. Yeah. So your daughter and son-in-law have been in Nashville for a while, right? So you don't need restaurants and all that type of stuff, correct?
Kind of do, but because most of the time we eat at home because we have a five-year-old, and that's who we're there for. But we
go out. You have a five-year-old?
I have a five-year-old granddaughter.
Oh, okay. Great. I didn't know if you had a five-year-old. Like, I worked with a guy who had pictures of twins on his wall, and I thought they were his grandkids for the first 7 years we worked together, and then they were actually his. His son was also in our building, so we had a 60-year-old kid in the building, and he also had like 20-year-old twins. You never know, man.
No, you never know, right? I could, but I don't want them. Grandchildren are much, much better.
Yes, you get to return them. Tim's got a newborn, and I've got he's got a newborn, 4 and 2, and I've got a 2 and a 4. So we are in the weeds over here.
God, I remember when yours was born.
Sorry. I'm on.
They go fast, that's for sure.
There you go. So, what is on your mind today?
Do you want to start, Larry?
Do you want to? Sure. Today, just to kind of humble myself back down, I started off, came to the office, then had a run up to West Palm Beach to pick up a check for $350,000.
Existing client already, not new client.
Not a new client. So we do that. She tells me she's home. I see the cars in the driveway, but nobody's there. I knock on the door, pound on it, ring the doorbell. Nobody's there.
Uh-oh.
So then I run across. So she, I don't know what to do. I leave a message, da, da, da. So I run across town because I need to have this lady in Palm Beach sign a document. She's been sick. So, you know, remember the days when you were first starting out, some of the crap you had to put up with? So
yeah.
I go and I call her and I tell her that I'm on my way and I'll be there in 20 minutes.
I feel like I'm still there.
So 25 minutes later, I get there, she answers the door. Oh, you're sooner than I thought. Hold on, I got to put my pants on.
Yeah, I think she knew you were coming.
An 85-year-old lady walking around with no pants. Welcome to my life. And
oh,
then I had to take her to the optometrist to get these glasses fixed because it was just down the street and drive her back.
What a guy.
I was at lunch with a 91 and 94-year-old and their aide, which was exciting. 69 years married. How about that? That's a hell of an accomplishment right there.
That is.
On top of living that long.
Right.
So. You don't miss those days, do you? Do you, Rob?
None.
Yeah.
I was just up in Midtown though at a Morgan Stanley meeting and. Got to listen to Jim McCarthy and the rest of the very talented group of people. And so I still have to go to meetings occasionally.
Okay.
So it was
well, Yeah. Well, today's not a total loss. We got some business in. We're picking up more monies. Things are coming about. And one of the guys I play tennis with is bringing a gentleman that he works with that I know has looking for financing for some of his properties. And so that may be another avenue for us. Gentleman came to the States with like $5 in his pocket and proceeded to turn that into
a lot.
Yeah, $500 million, something like that. So.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. One of Barry's largest is a Holocaust survivor that started like a machining shop and then started buying real estate in New York and New Jersey.
Yeah, he owned chicken farms in New Jersey.
It's amazing what some people accomplish. Makes me feel like a real loser, though, I will say that.
There's still
I'm serious.
Time.
I'm not joking at all.
You're not a loser. What you do matters, Ryan.
Yeah, whatever. I reached out to some centers of influence this week and talked to them about we're doing a lot more middle market investment banking for companies 20 to 50 million, and it's actually quite lucrative. On a $40 million sale, you can get like $200,000 in gross revenue. So I reached out to a couple of friends on that and let them know that, you know, we were players in that space, and you know, we're going to be getting together and talk about that and other stuff some more. But we're thinking bigger, Rob. That's the main idea, is we're thinking bigger, and we're realizing that we just need to land a few of them each year, but we have to do about 400 action steps in order to get those couple. And that's the hard part. It's the faith in doing all those activities to try to land those lucky few people.
So, point of interest, how are you doing on your Monday and Friday or Thursday afternoon meetings?
Monday meetings, we're doing pretty good. The Thursday meeting, we are not. Barry's away today for 2 weeks. Previous to that, we would do them, but they weren't as structured as we needed them, quite frankly.
Stuff is happening, though, on those fronts. You know, the website is getting redone. Barry and Tim are getting our LinkedIn updates automated, and we're getting our biographies online. Like mine says, I've been in the business like 5 years less than I've actually been around, and that type of stuff. So things are happening there.
Yes.
But we hit that wall you talked about to us last year where we were really enjoying some flush times where when we first started, we were picking up a ton of business right away, and now we're kind of we're pacing not as good as we'd like to be pacing here. We're about, yeah, our business is probably off about 8% this year as opposed to, you know, last year we picked up like 15%, you know what I mean? So it's been a tougher year for us. Hasn't been as much going on transactionally. Markets have been good, so it's helped us manage money, but yeah, everyone's just kind of sitting around, and people have money on the sidelines. They're digging their heels in even more. You know, they don't want to put the money in now, and you know, we're realizing how important it is to get some more of that, more of those new clients onboarded, so to speak.
How about the spreadsheet?
The one I sent you?
Yeah, the one you did, Ryan.
Did you get the copy of the one I sent you?
No, but I'll look for it. My question is, are you using it?
I've started to put my practice into it of my existing clients, like which ones are advocates, which ones are ambassadors, which ones are just customers. But no, I wouldn't say that. I'd say right now we're still using the rudimentary pipeline sheets that we had, and we need to get more people. We haven't been putting our prospects into those. No. But it's made.
Okay, good. Yeah, yeah.
I'll send
otherwise
you.
It will, it'll be dusty. You know, it'll get dusty really quick if you don't use it every week.
Are you part of a computer now?
Yes.
Now, to that degree, also, Rob, I've been fortunate because I'm probably the most social out of us. So a lot of that I've already do and try to keep in touch with it. I'm trying to quantify it a little bit better. I have not spread my practice out. Part of my practice directly should be with the advent of Tim be the most changed for us. I tend to be out there playing in traffic a lot anyway, but once I can load off some of these accounts to Tim, I should be out there doing it more, and then I need to structure it more that way for us.
Awesome. I've got another group in your bar in the south of you guys, and they it's the second time I've coached this team, and I finally got them to really take the Monday meeting seriously, and I'm getting some really good feedback on it. What do you like about the Monday meeting? It holds me accountable. I don't want to go into the meeting without being ready. I don't want to go into the meeting without having done what I said I'm going to do. I know the meeting's coming up, so I make the phone calls. And then, of course, guess what? The conversations we have each week now are really robust because this person has the talent but didn't have the discipline. So the meeting acts as their personal trainer where they have to show up or, you know, get beat up in terms of, you know, if you have a personal trainer and you skip a couple of weeks, you're not going to feel good about lifting the weights you need to lift or do the work you need to do. It's not going to feel good. So the accountability is critical. And that's, I find that this is the most important thing that you can do as a team is to hold each other accountable at these meetings. And because you've got the talent, you know, you're playing in traffic. Now, you know, organize it.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Not everybody's playing in traffic or playing in the right traffic either. Barry's not as social as myself or Ryan, but and he knows that he needs to do stuff. It's just a matter of getting there and you know, doing it. But Barry's kind of the anomaly because he has the talent. He just doesn't have the discipline. And he doesn't seem to have a network, but he's got to build it.
Barry's realizing it. All of his clients he got when he worked in the bank, and bankers introduced him to people, and then he got a couple of people that were giving him some referrals. But a lot of Barry's core business is getting really old and, like, dying, and he realizes he's not replacing those people with new blood as much. He's doing a good job holding on to some of the kids, but he knows he needs to get out there and do more. So him and Tim have been they're looking at doing more of some of the trade shows and getting and playing in traffic and getting in front of more volume of people that they don't have to depend on social interaction to meet. Whereas I think Larry and I are going to probably fare better doing more of the social interaction route. To get to the people that we want to meet. I also think we should talk to him about the thing with the team in New York also. So Barry's realizing it, Rob.
Okay.
You know, because He's brought in less assets than I have for 2 years in a row, and I don't say it to him, but he damn well knows it. And that for him, it's an ego thing. So I'm closing in on him, and that's something he's not going to be able to handle real well. So.
Well, I mean, it's the whole team is much more productive, including the support staff. If you guys are organized and have a clear marketing effort and sales effort, you're going to like your jobs more. You're going to be happier. It takes some work to consistently show up and right. to schedule. And but I'm telling you, it's the answer. The other part of it, part two, is there. Everybody on the team is listening to my Supernova Multiplier every chapter, you know, every day. Not every chapter every day, but each chapter, you know, every day for once a day for 5 days. And so they're learning the language of Supernova, they're learning the language of the multiplier. So they're asking really good questions about details of introductions. What do you say when they say this? So it's very helpful for me as a coach. I can be more help because mm-hmm. they're in traffic using the material, getting results, and asking good questions. So it's more fun.
We ordered books the last time, but you were ordering.
It's in audio. Yeah, it's in audio now. So you can order the audio version of the Supernova Multiplier.
Okay. So, because for me, even to come put that in the morning as I'm driving or even going home, it just to have that playing is a good thing
yeah.
to do.
Yeah. So we have all three books now on audio. So the Supernova Multiplier, Supernova Teams, and Supernova Advisor. So okay. there's huge amounts. And what happens is, Larry, as you know, when you listen to something, it stimulates your brain and you start to think of other things that you can use it for, right? So you know, we're talking about introductions. We're talking about networking. We're talking about mastermind groups. Something is going to click where you say, you know, that guy would be great for that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so your brain just goes, and by the time you get to the office, you're already on fire. So you look forward to that meeting instead of, oh, God, why do we have to meet, you know. Anyway, so that should be a big help to you.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll order those today.
Great. Great.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm finally very excited. It took a long time. You know, editing an audio book is a little different because, you know, and I have the same guy that read it. He's an announcer in Indianapolis, a TV announcer. And when he reads it, he's going to read every word. So the editing is even more detailed than even the book, because you'll know that in a book, there'll be a few mistakes. Well, you can't have them in audio.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting when you think about
there.
It, right? You got to read what's there, and you go, da-da, right? That would be stupid. So it may not have been my fault, but maybe the editor – yeah, in the final version, put an extra word in, or didn't, you know, did screwed it up somehow.
He didn't, anyway. You know, he didn't embellish or ad lib a little like Robin Williams playing the genie or something.
I would see if I read it, I'd get off on a tangent, you know, and tell you, oh, by the way, this is what you. It's not in the book, right? So I thought it would. Plus, I would never have gotten around to finishing it. So. guy's name is Scott Hoke. He's a good guy, and he does a nice job.
So, Rob, there's a team that the covered call option strategy I run. I've been running it for this guy down here in Boca, who's part of a bigger team out of Long Island as well, and they do a lot of stock plan business where they take the reinvestment from outside assets of the stock plan members and roll them into Morgan Stanley. And they approached us. I've been talking to them for a couple of years, and they're starting to put money in our option strategy. And they approached us, or approached me about bringing to the team the idea of us being kind of a satellite of their team up there, because they're trying to plant a flag in South Florida because there's not really a lot of corporate stock people down here, and they want to partner with us on this business. Basically, we get 70% and they get 30%, but we can't get into it without them because they're one of the like approved teams or whatever, and So what we're trying to figure out is, if we did this, we would not want to work with every Tom, Dick, and Harry, of course. What are your thoughts on getting involved in this type of business? Like, are we okay to do it as long as we just keep the cream, so to speak, and let the other stuff be handled by other people?
Yeah, I would build a team, a virtual team, where you take what you want and you give other people what you don't want. Now, you say, well, there just isn't anybody that wants the little accounts. Well, client services department will, so the center will take them. So you just need to make a nice, clean pass off, but you need to establish a relationship with them, which I'm sure they already have. So that would be the key, and I'd make it very clear to the boys that you're going to do business with what you're after and then what you'll bring to the table, and what would be, what they're after is somebody, it sounds like, somebody that would prospect for this business, be fair, but make it, hands off. For 70%, that's a pretty good deal.
All right. Now, their practice that they run is very similar to ours.
I don't know if I'd say that, Larry. I mean, that in the regards that he said they're only taking on new individual clients at $2 million, but I don't think that, I think that they've been doing a lot more mass market than we are. I believe they have a lot more clients than we have.
Okay.
I may be wrong, but Rob, they actually have like 5 or 8 guys in a room that handle a lot of this inbound calls that are filtering and doing stuff. Like, they've set up like an operation there.
Yeah. So what would you do about that?
Well, we're not going to have the volume that they have either, but if we need to bring people on, we can bring people on. I mean, if it's one of those things where it's going to be 5 or 10 people a day, for right now, that's something that Tim could do once he's up and running here shortly. Like if it comes to be like 100 people a day, then we would have to bring in other people, clearly.
I would become more familiar with the profitability of the business. Not to be a dick, but just to be smart, right? To, how profitable net after expenses is this business for you guys?
He said they did $2 million in revenue from this type of business last year, but I'm under the impression that they don't really do much more than three or three and a half. So it's a pretty significant portion of their business.
And what are, what are the expenses associated with that revenue?
Gotcha.
See what I mean? You could have $1 million of expenses. I don't know. Maybe not. You got eight guys.
Either way, we should. It's a good. Either way, it's a good question to ask, Chris. If the expenses are $100,000, that's one thing. If the expenses are, you know, $900,000 or $1.9 million. Yeah.
Right. Each guy probably cost them $100,000. Eight guys. So it's $800,000. So maybe, you know, what are they? What's their net? So that, you know, can you run the business profitably? And remember, revenues aren't your most important item. Time is. You can always get the revenues, but if you don't have any time, you can't get the revenues. So just make sure it's a good business decision, not just a revenue decision. I was in the 403B business. I was in a lot of businesses. And I was in the commodity business. And there were just businesses that I should never have entered. I had a guy that was in the 401K business, startup 401Ks. That was a horrible business.
That's bullshit. That's not happening here.
Yeah.
Right. And 403Bs was a horrible business. You know, stock options, you know, that's a good business. Stock option business is a good business because it's people don't get stock options unless they're, you know, unless it's a dinky little company. Most of them don't get them unless they're executives. So that's a good business. The stock purchase plan business, not so great.
Are they using us to lay off the business they don't want?
No, they're using us for local.
Local, okay.
Down here. There are companies down here, but there's no.
So it'd be more geographic.
Yes. Yeah, they're looking to plant a flag in South Florida, so other teams don't come down here.
I think you could end up with that designation and do a nice business. So,
we're trying to find ways, like, you know, that may be something that Barry, like, that's something Barry would be really good at, calling people up out of the blue and getting them to come in for a meeting. Like, that, I'm not as good at that as Barry is. Barry's the best one on our team with that. Like, he'll convince anyone to come in and take a meeting with us. Like, I've seen him work absolute miracles where I don't know how it's happened. We're trying to explore this, but to your point, you know, we don't want to spin our wheels with this and have it distract us from the prize. If, you know, like, because right now, if we can get a couple of, you know, $20 million clients in a year, we're going to raise our revenue by, you know, $1 million a year. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't take that many, you know, so. But right now, the hardest part for us is that we're not looking at a pool of massive, of large prospects. We're looking at a lot of work to build that pool of large prospects. And that's why we're, I think, not as enthused, you know, in terms of, like, if we could see the people and, like, we knew we were prepping for these people, it would be so much easier than looking and saying, we're doing all this work and we know it's going to work. We know it's going to happen. We know, you know, and having the faith. And that's the hardest part. And to your point, I know you learn it and then you adopt it and then you believe it and then you're, you know, enthusiastic about it. You know, like, I understand that process. We're just trying to, you know, like, where we've learned it, you know, now we're kind of in that adopting, believing section, you know, and I think once we start to close some more big clients, it'll happen, you know, like at the end of last year, I had, you know, I got a $5 million and a $3 million right at the end of the year, and I came in, I was like, I couldn't wait to come to work in the morning, you know what I mean, like I was like, bye baby, I gotta go, you know, like I was like so ready to get here, and the last couple of months, I've kind of hit a dry patch, and like, in terms of new assets, and like, I need something to, you know, I need a kill, you know, I need like something to get me re-energized, so to speak, you know?
Well, one of the things that, that this guy told me about this week was really, it was pretty interesting. This is a guy who was completely stuck, okay? Did Supernova initially and did it great and doubled his business and life was good. And then all of a sudden just got all the business from, well, here's the interesting thing. He thinks he said he got all the business from my existing clients. Well, what's interesting about this go around is he just told me about this woman he has in Columbus who was a wonderful lady, wealthy, center of influence, just retired, you know, an ambassador who never gave him introductions, but he never got anything out of it. Well, penetrating the questions a little bit, it turns out that she gave his name out to lots of people with his phone number and no one ever called. Okay? So
that's the worst.
It was, right, but it's the way it, I mean, he lost, she turned over control because he turned over control to her, you see? In fact, he never.
Yeah, my mom handed out 200 of my business cards. I told her to stop. I said, just find out if someone will talk to me and get their phone number for me. You know, like, handing out a business card might as well just, you know, light it on fire right then and there.
Well, it turns out that when he listened to the book over and over and he finally got it. And today I said, so what's the most important thing in working with a center of influence in terms of getting an introduction? And he said, it's the enthusiastically endorsed model. I said, well, good answer, but not quite. It's keeping control of the introduction process. You don't get a phone number, you get an introduction. And so what I want you to do is listen to these things so well that you're going to remember the exact words. So when somebody says, I've got a guy for you, or you're doing the VIPSA process and you end up with six names and you circle back and go, so which one of these do you think would need our services the most? And he says, oh, my brother. Your next question is critical. Your next question is, you know him a lot better than I do. How would you suggest that we meet?
Right.
It's back to the advice model. You remember it's the Larry Biederman's advice model. You're really asking him how to do this. So it's not giving a phone number, getting a phone number. We never do that. We get an introduction. So she's in Columbus, he's in Miami. So what should he do? He should have a phone introduction. So he simply does it the exact same way. What would be a good time for us to meet on the phone? And she said, well, and you could say, you know, next week, is this a good time? No, you know, or you can say, how often do you talk to her? Well, I'm going to meet her this week. Okay, great. So why don't we plan on a phone introduction next week? It's the 4th of July week. So, you know, what would, if Thursday would work, good. Thursday at 4, is that a good time? Yes. Okay, Thursday at 4. Here's what I suggest if this works with you. I'll do a conference call. I'll hook you in first. Then I will then call her. Then you introduce us, you introduce her, and you introduce me, and then we'll do a little get to know each other, and then you step off the phone, and I will we'll get to know each other at that time.
Right, like when we introduced one of our high-end clients to a new CPA, we drove down to Fort Lauderdale with the CPA and sat in the house and did a whole meeting with the new CPA to introduce them formally, and like it was a very easy, natural thing, and now this guy just starts working with him, as opposed to us just saying, oh, you know, Pat's going to call you. You know, Patrick is a nice guy, and then, you know, having it go that way. Like, we literally, you know, two of us spent the morning on this introduction to try to solidify it for this guy, you know, and he got the business.
Well, and that's somebody that you care about, both of them, and it's a, you know, think about it, it's a $100 million client, it's worth it, right? So if you want the business and you want it, you want them to feel this concierge experience, then you give them the concierge experience. You can't do that with everybody, right? But you can do that with people that are qualified.
Right.
Okay. So that was a big, you know, then he went, you know, what I realized was, she loves me, and I go there once a year, and all I do is see her. And he said, I was such an idiot, you know. I need to go there twice a year, tell her we're going to go, and then have a dinner party and invite her friends, meet them, and so on. I said, yes, hello. This is a wealthy woman. So that's what you need to do. So there's business in your book that you're not getting.
Yeah.
Because,
sure.
I mean, all of us, right? All of us. We're not getting the business we deserve. If we just look at our top 20 clients and say, what can they do for us that they're not doing now? Can they introduce us to people? Oh, God, yeah. And wouldn't they introduce people that would be like them? Yes. What if we duplicate just them? Doesn't that pretty much get close to doubling our business? Yes. Okay. So we do these other things, but we should focus on our best clients as well, right?
Yes. That's part of why, like, I sent you that segmentation tracker, and like we want to replicate our ambassadors and our advocates, clearly. And I'm telling people flat out, like I'm telling them, I'm like, I need 20 people. If I could get 50 people like you, I'd shut it down. You know what I mean? I just would not take on other clients. You know, like try to, you know, kind of flatter them that way. But that guy that burned his book down to 30 clients that you wrote about in the first book.
Yeah.
How long? George. Huh?
George Kemp.
Yeah.
Kemp.
So, when he did that, what firm was he at? Was he at a big wirehouse?
He was at Merrill Lynch. We were all at Merrill Lynch. I spent my whole career at Merrill. Yeah.
All right. So that guy, when he burned it, like, was he a big producer when he decided to do that? Or I can't remember in the book. Was he doing $1 million or?
No, he was a $350,000 producer.
Okay. So he burns it down to his top 30, which I think in the book you said represented like 70% of his revenue or 60%. I can't remember if you gave those figures.
90%. 33 clients of 650 represented 90% of his revenues.
Wow. All right. We're not that top heavy.
And a year and a half later, he was doing $750,000.
So he doubled in 18 months.
Right. And then Tony Singh did the exact same thing. That's when we said, maybe we've got something here.
Okay, so he did the same thing, doubled 18 months after trimming down.
They all.
So my question is for them to double, I assume, like, they didn't go from 30 to 65. They didn't bring on 35 new relationships in a year, probably. They probably brought on 10 or 15 really good ones.
Right. The average person doing Supernova for 2 years has 70 clients.
Okay.
And I've had him go from 100 from, you know, from 800,000 up to, you know, go up, you know, increase the revenues from 800,000 to say 4 million, 5 million without increasing the number of clients at all. They still have 70 clients.
I'm at like 65 right now.
I'm at 75 and Barry's probably at 45.
You are not at 75, you liar.
I thought that's the number you gave me.
No, you're like at 110.
Oh, okay. Which needs to go back down to 75.
Yes, yes. You do have 75 clients and another 40. So, you know, for us, on our last reporting, you know, the 80-20 rule is more like 60-20 for us. I'm looking at it right now. Like, we have a pretty solid upper middle class of clients. Where are we? It's driving me nuts. Yeah. So the top half of our clients represented 854 plus 76 plus 178 plus 72 divided by 854. So the top half of our clients represented like 60% of our revenue, probably.
Wow.
No, that's right. 854 divided by 1520.
It better be 90%.
No, it was only like 56.
What?
These numbers are a little dated. I gotta get the new ones. I gotta run this report again. It's probably changed since.
It should be on the system now, though.
Huh?
Under my practice.
Is it showing that?
It should show a breakdown of it.
My practice.
You guys have fewer clients and a flatter book. If I took the average person, they would have, you know, 50% of their clients would represent 90% of their book at least. But, you know, if you have a flatter book with, you know, with the biggest clients not overweighting tremendously, maybe a couple really big ones, but everybody else being pretty much the same size, and you could do that. So that doesn't mean anything except that, you know, you just want to concentrate on the top 20%. If you had 300 clients, then we'd have a big problem. But since you don't really need to get rid of many, then you don't have a big problem at all.
Yeah, actually, so Rob, for us, our over 10 million clients represent 25% of our revenue. Our 5 to 10 million clients represent 11%. So that's 33% of our business in the top 15%. And then if we go to the next segment, the 1 to 5 million, that's 23% of our households and 43% of our revenue. So if we took everyone a million and over, that would be 31, that'll be 39% of our practice at, actually, no, these numbers are screwed up because it's counting all these 0 to 100, all these 0 to, that's the problem. We have all these accounts that have like a dollar in them and it's counting like 100 of them as clients of ours. So yeah, you're probably right in that case.
Yeah, I would think so.
If we take that out, 23. Yeah, 75% of our revenue is from the top 25% of our households. Yeah.
For the 82-year-old. There you go.
No, I'm sorry. That's wrong.
Okay.
Our top 110 households represent 75% of our revenue. So that's like our top 50%.
Okay.
We have this huge sleeve in 1 to 5 million. That's like our.
Yeah, you don't have 300, 400, 500 clients. So you're the reason it isn't the 80-20 rule is because you guys have few clients.
We've already called them up. We've already got rid of
clients. Yeah. So, put another, only about 5% of our revenue comes from $100.
You guys you're starting to go in and out.
Okay.
Thank you.
25% is not under $1 million.
You guys still there? Uh-oh. Hello? Hello?
Are you there?
Rob? Can you hear us, Rob?
I think he's gone.
He'll dial back in, maybe, or maybe not.
Hi, guys.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You were breaking up, and then you went away.
I'm just saying, for us, our top 110 households represent 75% of our revenue. And if we were to give up, and that's basically at $1 million and up. So if we got rid of everything under $1 million, we'd give up about a quarter of our revenue. Probably a little less. But yeah, that 1 to 5 million is half of our practice. That's kind of our...
That's where we have a majority of our client.
Headcount, for sure.
Yeah, and that's fine.
In the 1 to 5 million.
But you want to, you want to take your minimum seriously and really try and increase the number of very large clients that you have. To jack that up a little bit.
Yeah.
So it becomes, the number of $5 million clients is really growing. One of the things to do is to look at that spreadsheet and say to yourself, which clients, what do they have in assets? Because that was one of the things I told you to put down, right? The assets away from us. Which ones can move from left to right, but also which ones can we grow or will become, go from 2 million to 5 million because they've got assets away or they're inheriting or they've got stock options or they got this or that, so there's lots of information on that sheet you can use to help each other, and that's why I like you going through that every week. You don't have to go every column every week, but each week maybe you concentrate on one column and say, okay, how can we move customers to clients?
Right.
Well, every time you do that, that's money. Don't do that every week. I just want you to do that one week. Next week, how do we move clients to ambassadors? And then how do we move advocates to ambassadors? When we've got a guy that's every year for the last 3 years has given us an introduction. He hasn't given us one this year. Let's make sure we make a phone call. We're halfway through the year. Let's get him. Let's get him. Let's get an introduction from him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you guys are reluctant to ask.
No.
I think you just, it's just a process, right? It's just getting the process down in your head that something there, the words will work and you feel comfortable and you keep control. You know, that's where I find it breaks down, where people are just getting lots of names, or they're getting, people are telling them, yeah, I gave your card out to these people. Yeah. And they're going to call you. It's like, yeah, that's
all right. So for this guy that's coming in today, the guy that may not really be into stocks and bonds, but is worth a ton of money and has businesses and lots of land, how would you suggest we approach this guy?
Well, you're going to be leading with lending, right?
Yes.
Well, you better make sure that you can lend to him, okay? So, to me, it's an interview. You're interviewing him. So you better be prepared to know the questions you need to ask in order to lend money to somebody like him. Because you can go down a rat hole with these guys, and they end up, everybody else in the market has turned them down, and you spend 3 months before somebody in your firm turns them down, and then you're just royally pissed off. So that just comes. Yeah, me too. I mean, that's, guys used to bring that to me all the time. I go, did you really interview him and find out he's got a terrible credit, you know? No, I just, you know, promised, and then you want me to go to bed to make a bad loan. No, I'm not going to do it. So,
that's all I say.
Yeah, get his back. Yeah, do your profile now, quick. You know, get as much background on him, reputation, and the rest of it. Because anytime you're lending, you're using the firm's money and your reputation to lend to that guy, just like you're a banker. And you better be right, okay?
Okay.
Firm gets really pissed off when somebody doesn't pay off their loans. So,
yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. So, you know, he's coming, which means he might need you guys, which is okay, but, you know, better be prepared and thoughtful, and what securities can he use as collateral, you know, not to bust his balls, but just, you know, what banker questions you have to ask. What does the banker ask?
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
signature guarantee. Okay, so good. So you know. So you're not a rookie at this. Okay, great.
I understand the collateralization of all the securities and percentages and release and all that stuff. So we're good on that front. I'm just asking more from emotional standpoint, or you know, just trying to.
His kids went to St. Andrews.
We could do securities for grandkids. We could open 529s. We could get maybe, you know, charitable trust or donor advised funds and all that kind of stuff.
And I know that he's done some building already with UBS. So I know he has a relationship there.
Wow. Great.
So.
Yeah, they'll give money to the Nazis. UBS doesn't care.
To the Nazis. Well, if he's, you know, if he's built some buildings, then, you know, then he got past their security clearances or whatever, and they like him. That's a good sign, seriously. You know, so he's not a complete idiot.
I doubt he is if he's worth what he's worth.
So, guys are at different stages. Remember that. You know, at some point, it's like me. I had all my stuff, right, in Indianapolis. Now I got rid of all my stuff. Sometimes guys want to get rid of all their land, all their real estate. They just want to get liquid, and they don't mind investing in the stock market then. They have to. Nothing left. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at some point, everybody retires. So, you know, I can't, without interviewing him, I can only speculate.
Sure.
But, you know, guys that buy real estate tend to only love real estate, and that's okay. You know,
yeah.
We do the best. Municipal bonds are usually something they can really understand. So, you know, they usually have a municipal bond portfolio.
All right, cool. Thanks for the wisdom.
Okay. Well, you guys are doing, you sound like you're doing well. Okay, I feel constructive about today. You're
we're playing in a lot of traffic. My plumber friend actually just got a bid. He's getting a bid from a big company to buy him out, which will be north of $4 million. You know, and he's coming to me to ask all the questions. My problem is I think I might have to tell him not to sell it. you know,
why?
Because he's clearing $800,000 a year cash flow, and he's 33 years old, you know. And if he gets $4 million for it, that's great. But after taxes and everything, like that's, you know,
he'd be
not that much.
Right? Why doesn't he buy it? You know, buy
what
another
one.
Do a roll up himself. If you can buy them for $4 million and they get $800,000 in cash flow, he should be the buyer, not the seller.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm telling them. you know.
Yeah, do a roll up of all his buddies.
Yeah, I'm getting drinks with my air conditioning guy because I think like his company with some a little bit more clarity would just be printing money, but I don't know. It's frustrating seeing what some of these people are up to.
But you can help them. I mean, that's truly what you can do today as a consultant. You're a banker. You know, you can help these guys. You can provide them some leverage and get them to do some things that they should do to get rich.
Yeah, I did a national conference with him I did a national like Facebook video meeting with a bunch of plumbers around the country and stuff, and answered a bunch of money questions for them, just trying to get out there and play in traffic a bit more because it is an underserved market. My dad's in the airboat and conservation club down here in the Everglades, and I'm telling you, all these guys out there with him are millionaires. You know, tow truck companies and construction, and you know, a bunch of trades and blue collar and stuff, but they've got money, you know. They just think everyone's out trying to screw them, you know. So.
Well, they, you know, my buddy for Greystone started, you know, at zero, and now he's the biggest producer in Morgan Stanley's institutional Greystone business, Craig Dobbs. And
the steel guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
See, I do listen to you sometimes.
Right. And so, you know, these guys will trust you if you convince them. You just do one at a time and you never screw them. Because they're the same. All right, boys, I gotta go.
Thanks. Take care.